Bottom of the 10th, Arenado, the pitch, swing, and a line drive down the left field line. Stay fair, and it's gone! A slammer for Nolan Arenado, a walk-off slammer! Right down the left field line, and the Cardinals win it in the 10th inning. What a moment here at Busch Stadium. The team is going crazy at home plate. Two comebacks for the Cardinals in this game, and the game winner.
Our conversation with Ricky Horton is brought to you by Goodwill. Give hope, give local, give Goodwill.
I know the guy that made that call.
Oh,
he's my best friend in the whole world. We go clubbing.
Nolan was our best friend that day, wasn't he?
Man,
that was
great,
awesome.
Great
so
game.
Cool.
I was at that game and, of course, left before that happened because I'm an idiot. Great game, great play, great call. Rick, to what degree, because like we've chewed this up and spit it out so many times over this season about why we're not doing this or why we are doing this.
Yeah.
And the guys are all professionals. Many of them are multimillionaires. They're so good at what they do. But sometimes it comes down to good old-fashioned little league energy, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. And you know, sometimes the energy really just comes from big moments like we just heard and we felt. And it comes from the big guys, too, typically. That's why there are perennial all-stars, guys like Goldschmidt and Arenado. And you just need moments like that to create that energy. It's hard to say which comes first, you know, the chicken and the egg. But I don't think you can just manufacture energy out of thin air. You know, you try to do that, but I think you have to get a little success. And then that breeds more energy, breeds more success. And then that's kind of where you get on a run. And hopefully the Cardinals have one more run left in them.
You know, in my experience, Rick, like there's two things that kind of create the energy you're talking about. One is the performance, right? Big moments, a big hit, the grand slam. Sometimes it can be something really funny, but it almost has to be accidental, right? Like Rally Squirrel.
Yeah.
You know, like something weird like that that gets everybody laughing because that laughter can relax you. And then you find yourself in a better place where, you know, when you're pressing all the time, you know, you've talked to us about it a lot, about Nolan during the course of the year. He presses. He's very hard on himself. Yeah. And you can tell that his mood is different just because he's actually getting results. But you're right, the chicken or the egg, which of those things comes first?
Yeah, you can try to create energy. And you think about it almost as like a stand-up comedian or a musician. I mean, you try to create something and sometimes it falls flat and then you realize you're forcing it instead of just letting the energy go and then sensing the energy and then having the kind of emotional intelligence of where to go next with that. I mean, I've been in clubhouses before where people do the rah-rah thing and everybody, basically their response is lighten up, Francis. I mean, we don't want it. You know, I mean, it doesn't resonate.
Right.
I mean, sometimes you put the pom-poms away and let's play baseball and then something silly happens. I mean, we actually had I'm trying to remember exactly what it was. It was a little acorn that somehow Tom Lawless carried in his bag during a win streak in 1985. What in the world that has to do with anything? I don't know. I don't know if it accidentally was in. I mean, it was the precursor to the Rally Squirrel is what I'm thinking. I mean, he carried it around and made sure everybody knew it's in his travel bag. We're going on the road. We're going to win. And, you know, it was organic. And it was odd, but for somehow it worked. And I think, you know, again, I think entertainers understand how that goes.
Rick, you don't have to say who and when it was, of course, but were you a part of clubhouses, whether in the minors, the majors, or coaching, where it was just kind of a downer? Like, this just isn't a good feel?
Oh, yeah. I had a clubhouse and won't get into the details of it. I had actually a little bit of a confrontation with a teammate of mine who, we were losing. I was playing with the White Sox. That narrows it down, but I wasn't with the Cardinals. But, you know, they brought in one of their buddies into our locker room after we lost 13-3. And it's like, and I yelled, I said, hey, he doesn't belong in here. And the guy said, he's my friend. And so we had a little bit of a back and forth. And it's like, you know, this isn't just an individual thing. This is a team thing. And he didn't get that. Honestly, in my opinion, he didn't get that. And I wasn't going to let him kind of get away with that. And that's happened several times. And there have been instances like that in Cardinal clubhouses, too. And again, it's not meant to be a mean thing. It's not meant to be, you know, kind of insulting to teammates. But, you know, your teammates are your teammates. And you're either in it together or you're not. and you do things to make sure that you recognize that you need each other. In baseball, a right fielder or a left fielder or a shortstop cannot win the game by themselves. It just doesn't happen. It needs to be a lot of pieces moving together.
What was your favorite clubhouse, Rick?
I think my favorite clubhouse was the 1985 Cardinals because it was so magical. What we were doing on the field was magical. Couldn't wait to get to the ballpark. Couldn't wait to see what Willie and Vince and Ozzy and Jack Clark were going to do that day. I mean, it was really a fun, fun team. And a lot of us had kind of come through the minor leagues together. We were young. We were kind of having that experience like David Freese and Alan Craig and Descalzo and John Jay. Kind of, okay, we came up together. Now we're doing it together on the big stage. And I think that was my favorite clubhouse.
Who is the best clubhouse guy you ever played with?
Oh, boy, there's so many good ones. I think Bob Forsch, Bruce Sutter would be guys that cared about. I think George Hendrick, the most underrated great clubhouse guy ever, the guy that never talked to the media because he was using all his energy, I think, on creating a good clubhouse. And he would do it with humor. I mean, George said some very, very funny things that kind of wouldn't work in today's culture.
Yeah.
HR might be involved. But the point is, it was fun for all of us, and it was kind of lighthearted, and he had a great sense of humor, and he was doing it always with a purpose.
Rick, in your experience, you caught my attention when you were talking about sometimes the rah-rah things fall flat. As a professional, and you can go minors and majors or just majors, whatever you want, as a professional, how often did anybody pull anything like that actually worked? The rah-rah, pound the table, turn things over, what fans always talk about because you see it in movies. How often does that actually happen, and does it ever work?
Well, I think when a player does it, the way the teammates look at it, because, look, everybody's a big leaguer. I mean, we all didn't just kind of roll out of bed and show up in the big league, so we all had success somewhere. So when somebody does that and they're on our level, and even if they are an all-star or not, it kind of like, oh, wait a minute. When the manager does it, it gets your attention because you think that maybe they're going to kind of back up the truck and you're going to go do something else with it. So, and so I've had that before. We had the great Cardinal Director of Minor League Development, Lee Thomas, had a meeting where he yelled at all of us for about 30 minutes. And I actually told that story the other day just thinking about it. And that had an effect, trust me. That wasn't rah-rah so much as, you know, start playing or we're going to get new players. And, I mean, I think when a person of authority does that, it's different than I think a teammate has to be careful about that because it might be seen as, you know, you're rah-rahing, but maybe you got to worry about yourself.
Yeah.
You just do it yourself. And I think that's where it gets a little prickly.
Is that a thing of the past, Rick, managers dressing down the players?
Yeah, it is not. When you talk about that now, Dave, to people, they look at me like I got two heads. I mean, it's like, what in the world are you talking about? And I say all the time, and you've heard me say it on with you guys, is my favorite coaches, the ones I have the fondest memories of and the most appreciation for, are the ones that I picture yelling at me or dressing me down or and it's not just yelling at me just to put me down, but to help me.
Right.
And so, but that kind of, and I don't want to say old school, I'm just going to say stern coaching authority was helpful to me. And I feel like it's hard to do that now because guys are a little more siloed with their agents and the money and the game as it is.
I totally agree. Amy in the first hour said that she's so thankful that she was a kid pre-smartphone, and I agree with that. And I'm actually very thankful that I was an athlete when coaches yelled at you. And I never had an abusive coach, but they absolutely yelled at you kind of nonstop. And in football one time, I was a freshman, and it was doubles practice, which used to be like 8 to 10 and then 3 to 6, and it didn't matter how hot it was, and they wouldn't let you get a drink. It was just like torture. And we were doing hit-its on a dry field. My mouth was completely dry. I had no moisture in my head. And I'm like, you know what? I don't need this. It's still summertime. I'm just going to quit, and I'm going to forget about this, and I'll whatever. And I start walking off the field. And Coach Bill Smith, who was a big yeller, was looking at his clipboard. I walked by him. He didn't even look at me. He said, if you do this, you're going to regret it the rest of your life. And he said it really low key. He wasn't yelling at me. He wasn't making an example of me. It was man to man. First time someone had spoken to me man to man. And I turned around and went back and kept doing hit-its. And here I am, almost 60, and I'm still talking about it.
Well, and you still feel that, and you would have felt that differently. And, you know, I always joke about it when a guy comes up and says he's going to give 110%, which is my least favorite phrase in the history of the planet. You can't give 110%, mathematically impossible. We can discuss the math later. But the point is, you know, we don't even know what that is. I mean, when if you're not in the deepest training, and I've never been in boot camp. I mean, I've been in boot camp at the Y, but not real boot camp. I mean, you do things that you have no idea you're capable of doing, and often you need somebody to help you get to that point.
That's right.
And it typically makes you better. And you know, again, it's not the point of it's trying to achieve excellence. It's not punishment. It's just pushing just to see the limits of what you do. We just saw the Olympics. You think those folks didn't have somebody pushing them and telling them that all of them did. And I think it's not a bad thing.
Wheels, you're a coach. Talk about the challenges of coaching in the modern day.
Well, it depends. I mean, like, I feel like I've never had a whole lot of pushback, but I'm like what Rick's talking about. You know, I don't start yelling at you to start yelling at you, right? There's no, like, that's not the beginning. That's a part of the process. The yelling comes after I've gotten to know you, after we've had an off season of practices twice a week, and we've joked a lot, and we've had a lot of fun, because you have to build that trust. Because if you don't, the yelling doesn't mean much. But if you have that trust and you know I'm a fan of you, I want to help you, and now because of what you're not doing or you're not paying attention or whatever, I've got to get your attention. It's a useful tool. But I've been lucky. I haven't had any pushback on it.
But that's a great point that you just made. You have to have the – you know, you have to be invested in that person. They have to know it for that to work. Otherwise, it's just noise. And so that is such a good point. It's not yelling for the sake of yelling. I mean, you almost want to say, I'm not yelling at you, I'm yelling with you. But that's not really true. But that's what it kind of feels like. But I got a very fast story. One of the Cardinal coaches told me a story of managing in the minor leagues. And one of the players came to the park and he said, are you ready to go today? He'd been hurt. And he goes, and I won't give all the details of it because I don't have the permission. But it was a great story. And this is fairly recent. And the young player said, my dad said I should take an extra day off because I'm not sure I'm 100%. He goes, okay. So he didn't play him that day, the next day, the next day, the next day, the next day. And then the guy who ran the farm system called him and said, hey, you're not playing this guy. And he goes, nope. And then just said, I'm not doing it. And so then the kid finally came to him and said, hey, you know, I'm ready to play. I don't want to play. And he goes, okay. Didn't play him the next day, didn't play him the next day. And then he played him the 3 days after that. And he brought him into the office and he said, look, you're going to play today, but don't you ever tell me that your dad is running this team because I'm running this team.
Nice.
And if you don't think you can play, be a man and tell me you can't play. Not that your dad says you can't play. And I believe when I heard that story from this coach, I believe that that guy that heard that lesson carries that with him right now in whatever he's doing in the next in his next career is the responsibility not to kind of put it on somebody else, but to be man enough to either say it or not.
Especially as a pro.
Of course. That's right. That's right. But it happens. So that's the point. And this, you know, and so you can still do that. Now, in some organizations, if you try to sit a player who's a superstar, the front office doesn't back you, or the development people will say, no, this guy's got to play. We put a lot of money in him. It's like, well, do you want him to be a problem 5 years from now, or do you want him to be a man 5 years from now? And I think that's the answer you got to give as a minor league manager.
That's great. Rick, have a great weekend, buddy.
All right, great to be with you guys.
You hear that snare drum?
So good.
That's a Ludwig Supraphonic metal snare drum.
That's what I was thinking.
And then he would take black masking tape and he would tape the underside of the drum head and the top and tune it real high. And that's how he got that distinct,
that real loud
Van Halen
sharp
twink, twink, twink. So
just
cool.
The best. Everything about them is the best.
It's a good music day when both Dave and Wheeler are happy with the music.
You guys are geeking out.
We should be doing like I don't know how you'd call it, but classic heavy Fridays.
Yeah, I like it. Heavy metal
you
Fridays.
You won't want my kind of stuff, but if you keep it back then, like
this is a
Priest
this is,
and Van Halen.
This is a gateway to
this is a gateway.
Kevin music.
Is he getting his toe in?
This is a slippery slope. He starts with like, we should do like,
I don't know what you're talking about.
Heavy Fridays. Like
Slipknot Thursday.
Oh!
Because this man has a very different idea of heavy than the rest of us.
That's why I'm qualifying it as like the classics.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not so much the modern Wheeler stuff.
Uh-huh.
So let's hear Wheeler get mad at Tom Brady.
Oh,
I had to learn from being seventh quarterback on the depth chart to moving up to third to ultimately being a starter. I had to learn all those things in college. That was development. Then I went to New England, and I was developed by Coach Belichick and the offensive staff there. I didn't start my first year. I think it's just a tragedy that we're forcing these rookies to play early. But the reality is the only reason why they are is because we dumbed the game down, which has allowed them to play. It used to be thought of at a higher level. We used to spend hours and hours in the offseason and training camp trying to be a little bit better than next year. But I think what happens is it discourages the coaches from going to deep levels because they realize the players don't have the opportunity to go to a deep level, so they're just going to teach them where they're at.
Ugh. Tom Brady is too young to be doing the back in my day old man nonsense. Well, here's the thing. I got to say it nicely. I can't stand Tom Brady right now. And I can't stand him even more because I know we're going to have to listen to him on broadcast on the number one crew on Fox because he gets that because he gets to cut to the front of the line because he was a great player. Fine, whatever.
Which kind of goes against everything he just said.
I know. Exactly. Yes, exactly. So instead of working his way up the ranks as a broadcaster, he's going to jump right to the first team because he's Tom Stinkin' Brady. But also the thing that bothers me about it is Tom is of the belief that whatever happened to him is the right way. Because his experience worked for him. That's how it should be, which is completely and utterly stupid because he sits there. You know how he says rookies with stank, by the way? We got these rookies being forced to start. And the modern game is being dumbed down. Really, did they dumb it down when Peyton Manning started as a rookie? Did they dumb it down when Fran Tarkenton started every game as a rookie or Dan Marino or John Elway? I hate people who don't think about things. Tom is going right here by his own gut because he experienced it a certain way and it worked, so that must be the right way. But you ignore all of these Hall of Fame players who started as rookies. C.J. Stroud had one of the greatest years for a quarterback ever as a starting rookie last year. He was unbelievable. Unbelievable. One of the three or four best performances in the league last year as a rookie. I can't take someone who's supposed to be an analyst who will not think, who only wants to tell you, here's how it happened for me, and that's how it should happen for everybody. It's stupid. So other than being Mr. Perfect, he's also an idiot.
You know, the only thing that'd make this job better is if it was a music show.
Yeah.
You know, like what Riz has and, you know, Courtney and those guys, like, if we could play 6, 7, 8 songs an hour.
It'd be fun.
Mm-hmm. I mean, not only is it less content to have to come up with, but it's just cool vibe.
Well, don't you think, though, that they get tired of hearing the same songs over and over
those
again,
guys?
Though? Yeah, or just anyone in music radio. It's like, oh, my gosh.
But you know they're going to play the hits.
You're right.
Yeah, I guess. That's what would be cool about my fantasy station.
If it was your show,
station.
You could do your own stuff. Yeah,
you just do your own stuff.
Whatever.
And it would be like the old days of Casey, where we would just be picking it like 2 minutes before we played it, like we're doing today.
Fun.
Like, play Unchained. Okay, now, next.
Yeah!
Play Cradle Rock.
Ooh.
Don't play Slipknot.
Come on, man.
Razor's Edge?
Yes. So I always think it's helpful to know how I'm ruining my life. So I found this article. It's called You Destroy Your Health Rapidly with These 10 Stupid Daily Habits. So let's all go over these habits and see how we are ruining our own lives, okay? Number one is lack of adequate sleep. It can result in serious issues such as memory loss, mood swings, cognitive decline, and even dementia. Doctors recommend getting a minimum of 7 hours of sleep per evening. How much of us are getting 7 hours of sleep?
In the room?
Yeah.
I'm getting 8 or 9 hours in my bed, but sleep probably 5 to 6.
Okay.
Yeah. I do everything I can. Like, I don't stay up late. I don't drink. I don't, you know, do stupid stuff, at least when it comes to that. I give myself every chance in the world to sleep. I just don't very well.
What about you, Wheels?
I'd say average is probably between 7 and 8. You know, if like on the weekend, it'll be 8 for sure, mm-hmm. at least. If I feel like snoozing, I'll snooze after that.
Nice.
But sometimes, I mean, there are times where it's 5 or 6. It just depends on, like, if I have to get up, like in the baseball season, I can't fall asleep before 12 or 1. No.
You at that age yet?
No. I do.
Look at Mr. Sleeps Through the Night over there.
I do.
Like a baby.
No, I do.
Like a big red-haired baby.
I know. It's the truth. And I'm hoping it doesn't change, but I'm sure it will.
Andrew, how many hours of sleep are you getting per night?
Yeah, maybe like 7.
Yeah, that's about what I get to, I would think.
Yeah, I think seven sounds about right.
Okay, so we're all doing okay. Dave's slipping a little bit, but for the most part, we're doing
but he's
okay.
Trying.
He tries to get enough sleep. The next thing is smoking. Pretty self-explanatory why smoking would be bad for you, but specifically why it's bad for your brain is it can destroy the gray matter of a smoker's brain.
Hmm.
So watch out for that. The next one is not socializing.
Hmm.
I'm pretty bad about this one.
Yeah.
Being a hermit can result in understimulation, which often leads to anxiety, depression, and possibly even dementia. It's good for your heart, soul, and brain to socialize with family and friends.
I would argue that everybody in this room does that every day being here.
Yeah, that's true. For sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's,
we basically go to a 4-hour happy hour every day.
Yes. But even if you didn't, like being around people is now if you're stuck at a desk and you're like nonstop grinding at work, that's different than being in a place where you can talk to people and or like us talk at people for a long time.
Isn't it weird that our job is to have fun so that other people can have fun?
Yep.
Yeah.
With that's us? Weird, but it's great.
It's weird.
The next one is a sedentary lifestyle.
Uh-oh.
many people don't even leave home and work from their living room. Like, if you think about people who work from home, like, sometimes you just roll out of bed and then go to your desk across the room or something. So this is really bad for you, leading to brain health issues, such as an increased risk of developing dementia. So that's kind of the theme of this article.
Yeah, it sounded like everything gives you dementia. Sounds
really
like.
Sounds like that.
Yeah.
The next one is overeating.
Uh-oh. Oh boy.
It's getting worse.
I know. First two weren't these, and I was like, ooh, I might be in the clear. Spoke too soon.
Studies have shown that overindulging in food is linked to cognitive decline and memory loss, especially in older adults. Overeating was found to affect brain health, even if it was a healthy diet. So you can only imagine what processed foods are doing for you. That's the next thing on the list. Consuming junk food regularly. I'm sorry, Andrew. It's not great.
Well, Here's the thing. They don't specify what is overeating, right? And they don't specify what is junk food. So it's like, you know, I mean.
You know, it's weird.
I think we all know what junk food is.
What's weird about your eating, because I've eaten hundreds of meals with you. I've almost never seen you overeat at a meal.
I agree.
I don't overeat. I'm not an overeater. I will sometimes.
You're a grazer?
Well, the bigger issue is that I will sometimes eat until I'm too. I'll do the thing where I eat too fast and then the fullness kind of catches up. I'll do that on occasion, but then I'm also, I think it's maybe just the quality of what I'm eating, right?
Yeah.
Because if you eat not healthy stuff all the time, even if you're not eating a ridiculous amount of
good point.
You know, it's still not great.
Man, there is this British reality show. I don't think it's on anymore, but I used to watch it on YouTube, and it was called Secret Eaters. And it would be like people who were like, I don't overeat. I don't understand why I'm gaining weight. So the Secret Eaters people would come put cameras all over your house and in your car and at your work and stuff, and they would follow you, and they would basically show you all of these calories that you're eating without realizing it.
Yeah.
It was such a good show.
I thought you meant people were like hiding how much and lying about how much they were eating.
I think that's the thing, because when it comes to the good eating stuff, I ride the wave, right? Some years I'm amazing, some years I'm stupid at it.
Years.
And there will be I'm serious. Like I do that, and there are times I will think about it later. I'm like, did I just eat that? Like, why would I do that? Like, there's just no, you really sometimes don't recognize it in the moment.
Yeah.
And then after the fact, you're like, what the hell?
Or you'll be like, I didn't eat anything today. And then you really sit down.
Yeah. Then
and
you're
think
like, oh well.
Like, oh, I guess I did.
Yeah, I kind of did a lot.
When I get to the end of a 20-piece chicken nugget from McDonald's, there's always a little introspection that goes on. There's always a little bit of like, boy, that was an awful.
But there's something going on in our brains, because you recognize it, but not until after the fact. And then, but beforehand, you're like, this is a wonderful idea.
Yeah,
I can't wait to do this.
Nugget good.
Nugget so good.
When I take a bite, I'm like, man, nugget so good.
Oh,
and
nugget.
Then it's not until there's no more nugget to make me feel good that I'm like, oh. Nugget bad?
We need a t-shirt that says, this nugget good.
Nugget good.
Anyway, studies have shown that the consumption of fries, burgers, and soft drinks was linked to a shrinking of areas of the brain associated with learning and recollection.
You know what I miss? I have this, it's in my show prep today. I miss salad bars. It used to, like, restaurant had a big, badass salad bar.
They were everywhere.
You just don't see them much.
No, COVID killed them, I think.
No, I guess you're right.
Oh. I feel like they're back at Schnucks.
Really?
I think so. Okay. I'm pretty sure.
I believe there is both a wing bar and a salad bar at the
Godfrey
Schnucks.
That's not what I'm talking about.
You're talking about the restaurant.
I'm talking about the
like Ryan's Steakhouse.
It's funny you say that, though, because one of the best sit-down salad bars I've ever had in my life was at Schnucks. They used to have a restaurant called Schnook Station, and they had chilled metal plates, and they had a big chunk of cheese.
Oh,
nice.
And it was just fantastic.
Wow.
Yeah.
Schnook's food, it's good. Like, they're cooked, prepared food. Mm-hmm. I've not had a bad one at Schnook's. It's good.
Yeah, there are places like that. Any of you guys ever go to a Ryan's Steakhouse?
Oh, mm-mm. Yeah.
Because it had like
steak tips.
It had both the salad bar, but it had a hot food bar also.
The best.
And you just go for that.
I know we say this every time, but the Pizza Hut buffet, man, just, I will mourn that for the rest of my day. There was just.
Didn't we find out there's one still open within driving distance?
I think that was before COVID, so okay. I'm not sure if that's. Also, a lot of Pizza Huts in the area have closed.
Wait, wasn't there a story recently that they're reopening some Pizza Hut buffets? Or did I just dream that and I wanted it to be true?
I'm not certain. I don't remember that.
Just eating at Pizza Hut was a treat.
Oh my goodness. They had the video games. Mm-hmm. They had the big red cups, mm-hmm. the Parmesan and the red pepper on the table. Like, when they brought the breadsticks out, it's like
everything you classically remember about like eating out applies to like Pizza Hut. Ugh.
The next thing on the list that is very bad for your brain is, sorry, Wheels, listening to loud music.
Dang it.
That's your only one so far.
Doomed. Well, I mean, I'm kind of like half and half on the food stuff, like depending on the time. So like right now,
what year it is?
Depending on the year.
No, I'm weird, dude. I go in like, that's how it is. It's just like long runs of good or bad.
I love this line. Listening to loud music for more than 30 minutes per day, especially with headphones. I have I'm like you, Wheels. My earbuds are up super loud. You just can't really tell as much because they're like small. It's a smaller like speaker coming out. But it says it can lead to permanent hearing loss, and people with hearing loss are more prone to eventually developing Alzheimer's.
Damn.
So something we have to be very careful
about. I'm in trouble there.
Wheels, you're a smaller man than you used to be, like I am.
Yeah.
What got you big? What was your poison?
Not stopping eating like I was a college athlete when I got into my late 20s and early 30s, because that's when I was the heaviest, was probably right around 30, 31, 32. So in college, I ate nonstop. I mean, I was probably eating almost 20 hours a day. Like, I would go to the cafeteria. You ask Susan, the first time she saw me, like when we were hanging out, she saw my tray of food. I had two trays, one for my drinks and one for my food. And she was like, are you actually? I'm like, yeah, and I'm going back for more. Like,
I love the drink tray.
Yeah. Oh, I had four drinks.
I've never heard of that
before. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was all over it.
And all then, the same drink or different drinks?
No, they were all Mountain Dew.
Oh
mostly.
My God!
Actually, a tray of Mountain Dew.
It would be like. Well, they weren't big trays, but it would be like four Mountain Dews and like two waters because I had to get the hydration.
Jeez!
But it would. Yeah.
Where was this?
In college. Like, no, dude. I would eat a whole pizza. I would just whatever.
I remember those days.
And in college, it did not matter because we were 3.5-4 hours a day out in the heat playing, you know, practicing or lifting or whatever.
I did that. Nick's mom, Jen, and I, we gained the same amount of weight when she was pregnant with Nick.
Yeah.
I'd never been heavy in my life before, and she started wanting pizzas at 3 a.m. I'm like, rock on, let's go.
What an amazing idea.
Yeah. Who would have thought of that?
Yep. And then when you're in your 20s and early 30s, you're like, it's fine. I don't care. I still move really good. And then you get older and you're like, I'm not moving so good anymore. Mm-hmm. I got to fix something.
You know what's so genius about Alex Van Halen? That drum fill. Diggadit, 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 diggadit. I could teach any of you to do that in 2 minutes. It's so simple. It is not difficult, but much like Ringo for the Beatles, it was perfect for that song.
And
he was capable of doing like, obviously like Hot for Teacher and stuff like that, but it wouldn't have made sense for the song.
He's got a new thing, by the way. He's got a new audio book coming out with music that he and Eddie put together that has never been released before.
Let's get him.
Sure. Alex Van Halen would be great.
That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah.
We'd geek out.
Although Sammy says he's a jerk.
That's okay.
But Sammy thinks both the Van Halens are jerks.
Yeah.
Although, I don't know. Maybe he's right.
I don't know. Sammy's nice.
They're probably all jerks.
Yeah, no. Sammy seems like the
Sammy's cool.
Most normie of all of them.
Although
Anthony's a normal guy.
I didn't like Sammy when I met him.
Really?
And I have
just because he's a lot?
He's a lot.
So he was in Keishi, and I was on 97.1. I'd been doing it for like a year. And they changed it from, because they were trying anything. They were throwing the spaghetti against the wall, seeing what stuck. And they changed KFDK to female talk. And they didn't do a damn thing. I mean, it didn't. They didn't change anything about it. They just changed the branding. And so Favaz introduced me to Sammy. And I'm just like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. And it was right after, I know when it was. It was right after 9/11 because I went and I bought a red guitar. My band was playing at the Hard Rock and Sammy signed it and we auctioned it off. So he was very nice about that. But it just goes to show you how in a moment you can change the whole way you feel about someone unfairly, because Favaz is like, this is Dave Glover. He does a show across the hall at our talk station. It's a female talk station. And Sammy's like, female talk, you should hire me for the females. Gazow.
And I was excited. Such a lead singer thing to
do. Yeah, right? I thought he'd be like, Dave, nice to meet you. Tell me all about yourself. Like, well.
Yeah, he is like, more than probably any other, like, I don't know, celebrity or rock star or whatever you want to call it that I have met, he is the exact same as you would, like, expect.
Yeah.
Like, he is, I can't drive 55 at all times.
Yeah.
My kind of guy.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Like, he is very
red
much.
Rocker.
Am I the only one who hasn't met Sammy Hagar?
I haven't met him. Okay. I wish I did. Okay. We'd be best friends.
Yeah, he went to, like, when we were with Casey, he was there a lot. Like,
yeah, he was there a lot. Yeah, Favaz was cool.
Once every couple of years?
Favaz called me in one time, and I got to spend like an hour with Kiss. That was pretty neat.
That'd be fun.
Yeah, and it was like spending an hour with people doing an impression of Kiss. They were just, Gene Simmons was just so Gene, you know, and Paul Stanley. And I'm like, this is so weird. Making me feel strange. Kiss.
Did Paul have a shirt on? Guy never wears a shirt. Of course, he's a pretty good-looking guy.
Yeah, so if I look like him, I wouldn't wear a shirt either.
Yeah.
No kidding. Let's preview the Minnesota series.
Yeah, so you know, the Cardinals won 2 of 3 for Milwaukee over the weekend. That's a good series. It's hard because the math works against you right now. I mean, they have 35 games left. Atlanta has the last wild card. They're on pace for 87 wins. So you've got to go 24-11. To have a chance to get to 87 wins. So, you've got to finish with an amazing hot streak. So, even having a decent homestand, right? You played 6 games against 2 of the best teams in baseball. You went 500. That, in normal times, that'd be fine. They were all close games. The Dodgers series was very exciting. The Milwaukee game, even the game you lost. These games were very well played and very competitive. But, unfortunately, you're in a spot where 500, even against those teams, is not helping you. You need to win more. So, you look ahead now. Minnesota's very good. They're in second place in the AL Central. They're a wild card team, and they're actually better than their record. Like, they've been missing their star players at various points all year, and right now you'll be missing at least one, if not two, of those guys. Carlos Correa won't play. Byron Buxton might come back today, so if he comes back, it gets a little tougher. But they're a good team across the board. I mean, they hit, they field, good bullpen. The area where you could take some advantage, I think, is with their pitchers this weekend. They've got two rookies pitching. The guy tonight, big guy, throws hard. All righties, by the way, so no lefty starters for the Cardinals to worry about. Mm-hmm. And then tomorrow is Sonny Gray and Pablo Lopez. So Pablo's like their best talent guy. He's not having a great year, but you know, hard thrower, gets strikeouts. And then you got another rookie on Sunday whose name is Zebby Matthews. Not making fun. I just never heard the name Zebby. It must be short for something else. But he just came up a couple weeks ago, maybe.
So and see your boy up. Lucan Baker hit one?
How about that? Imagine. The guy that crushes left-handers at AAA forever might actually get to do that in the major leagues. Very helpful.
Who has a better chance of being our first baseman next year? Goldie, Burleson, or Lucan?
Burleson would be the guy. And I think they think enough of him for him to be an everyday player, like playing against lefties, too. And it's the problem with Baker that this is the difficult part is if he's not an everyday player, his lack of versatility hurts your bench because he can only play first base and DH. He would be a great platoon partner for a guy like Burleson because he kills lefties, but you just don't have any flexibility when you have that.
She's on fire. Oh, 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 O'Reilly. Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.